Welcome to the Arab Spring, a history. Episode 26, Camp David Accords. After the 1976 presidential election in the United States of America, hopes were high that a permanent peace treaty could be established. The incoming president was Jimmy Carter, former governor of Georgia. He was a Washington outsider, having not previously held a role in the federal government, and so it was hoped that he would be able to do what Washington insiders, such as Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, had failed to do: bring peace to the region. Carter particularly excited Arab hopes of a peace settlement by adopting the opinion that if both sides were to head towards a peace, then both sides would have to make concessions. He started speaking about a Palestinian homeland and Israel withdrawing from Arab-occupied lands. He met with principal Arab leaders and convinced them of his sincerity. But negotiations hit a stumbling block. Israel, still backed by the US, would not talk with the Palestinian Liberation Organization. This was a position which hardened by the election of a Likud government in 1977. Nonetheless, the US pushed on. In October 1977, they released a joint accord with the Soviet Union, stating their joint desire for a peace settlement along the lines of Geneva. The US even used the phrase, "the legitimate rights of the Palestinians." Carter soon changed his tune, following the negative reaction to this from Zionists within the US and Israel. Israel would not be expected to deal with the PLO. Things went in a surprising new direction in the November of 1977, when Sadat made a speech to the Egyptian government, which surprised the world, the nation, parliament, and even Sadat's own advisers. Sadat announced that he was going to Jerusalem to talk with the Israelis. The Israeli Prime Minister, Begin, was delighted by this, as indeed was most of the world. However, the Arab states felt betrayed by Israel. It seemed as though Egypt was looking out for itself rather than the wider Arab community. Particularly offended was Assad in Syria. Sadat made his speech to the Israeli legislature, the Knesset, and it was clear to all just how big a gap between the two sides would have to be breached. It was all very polite and dignified with talk of religious tolerance, but the opinions of Sadat and Begin were clear. Sadat rejected Israel's annexation of Jerusalem and wanted rights for the Palestinians. Begin made it clear that Israel was the God-given land of the Jews, which included the West Bank, and that the Palestinians were merely tolerated guests at best, reaffirming the need for a single-state solution. Carter was as surprised by everyone else by Sadat's announcement, but immediately jumped upon it to be a partner in the peace process. Sadat was in an incredibly difficult position. On the one hand, he was trying to represent the Arab states and the PLO, but they opposed what he was doing. He could threaten to pull out of the talks, but he couldn't let them fail. And, almost more importantly, the US and Israel knew that Sadat could not let them fail. Egyptians were tired of war and wanted peace. They felt that they had given the most to the Arab cause, and now the other states were being ungrateful. There was a wave of Egyptian nationalism sweeping the country. Finally, in September 1978, Carter was able to bring Sadat and Begin together to finally hammer things out. They met at the presidential retreat of Camp David in the United States and talked for 12 days, finally creating a framework for peace. There were two parts to this peace. the relatively simple, specific peace between Egypt and Israel, and then the more complicated Middle Eastern peace settlement. The deal between Egypt and Israel would involve restoring Egypt's own territory, some demilitarisation in Sinai, and normalising relations between the two states. The more general peace involved a self-governing authority for a transitional period of 5 years, before the end of which actual details as to the borders of Israel would be decided. One of the biggest problems with this deal was that no one was really sure who would represent the Palestinians. Israel wouldn't talk to the PLO, so it was hoped that Jordan would become involved in the peace process, but Jordan wanted nothing of the sort. This deal also left out just what to do with the Jewish settlements in the West Bank, something which was a victory for Israel, which saw the West Bank as fully part of their state. This attempt to solve the problem between Israel and Palestine would prove fruitless. But more progress was made on the specifically Egyptian part of the treaty. Jewish settlement on Egyptian land had been a huge issue, with many within Israel not wanting to lose such a strategic piece of land as Sinai. But Begin saw things differently. Egypt was the most threatening of the Arab states to Israel, and removing them as a threat would be a huge victory. Begin wanted Israel to have control of the West Bank. If Egypt would leave them to get on with that, then losing Sinai was a deal worth making. This led to the Treaty of Washington, signed on the 26th of March 1979 by Begin, Sadat and Carter. It brought to an end 31 years of war between the two states. Now, as we enter more modern history, it becomes easier to understand contemporary reactions. So, if you will allow me, I would like to quote from the New York Times front page of the 27th of March 1979, which ran with the headline, "Egypt and Israel signed formal treaty, ending a state of war after 30 years. Sadat and Begin praise Carter's role." Washington, March 26th. After confronting each other for nearly 31 years as hostile neighbours, Egypt and Israel signed a formal treaty at the White House today to establish peace and, quote, "normal and friendly relations." On this chilly early spring day, about 1,500 invited guests and millions more watching television saw President Anwar El Sadat of Egypt and Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel put their signatures on the Arabic, Hebrew and English versions of the first peace treaty between Israel and an Arab country. President Carter, who was credited by both leaders for having made the agreement possible, signed as a witness for the United States. In a somber speech, he said, quote, "peace has come. We have won at last the first step of peace, a first step on a long and difficult road," he added. Later, at a state dinner, Mr. Begin suggested that Mr. Carter be given the Nobel Peace Prize, and Mr. Sadat agreed. At the signing ceremony, all three leaders offered prayers that the treaty would bring true peace to the Middle East and end the enmity that had erupted into war four times since Israel declared its independence on May 14th, 1948. Mr. Begin, who gave the longest and most emotional of the addresses, exclaimed, quote, "No more war, no more bloodshed, no more bereavement. Peace unto you. Shalom, salam, forever." The treaty was the result of months of gruelling, often frustrating, negotiations that were finally concluded early this morning when a final compromise was reached on the last remaining issue, a timeline for Israel to give up Sinai oil fields. Under the treaty, Israel will withdraw its military forces and civilians from the Sinai Peninsula in stages over 3 years. Two-thirds of the area will be returned within 9 months after formal ratification documents are exchanged. The ratification process is expected to begin in about 2 weeks. In return for Israel's withdrawal, Egypt has agreed to end the state of war and to establish peace. After the initial 9-month withdrawal is completed, Egypt and Israel will establish, quote, "normal and friendly relations" in many fields, including diplomatic, cultural, and economic relations. Today's signing was greeted by criticism throughout the Arab world, Echoes of that were heard in Washington, where about 1,000 Arabs demonstrated in Lafayette Park, several hundred yards from the signing ceremony. Their anti-Sadat chants could be heard at the White House. Quote, "We must not minimalise the obstacles that still lie ahead," Mr. Carter said. Quote, "Differences still separate the signatories to this treaty from each other, and also from some of their neighbours, who fear what they have just done. To overcome these differences, to dispel those fears, we must rededicate ourselves to the goal of a broader peace with justice for all who have lived in a state of conflict in the Middle East. We have no illusions, we have hopes, dreams, and prayers. Yes, but no illusions." At the end of the ceremony, Mr. Carter, Mr. Sadat, and Mr. Begin grasped each other in a three-way hand clasp. Despite the show of cordiality, there were signs that differences between Egypt and Israel were far from over. In his speech, Mr. Sadat never referred to Mr. Begin, whom he reportedly does not like personally. By contrast, Mr. Sadat praised Mr. Carter as, quote, "the man who performed the miracle." Without any exaggeration, what he did constitutes one of the greatest achievements of our time, President Sadat said. In the printed text of his speech, Mr. Sadat made a strong appeal to Mr. Carter to lend, quote, "support and backing" to the Palestinians and reassure them that they would be able to, quote, "to take the first step on the road to self-determination and statehood." The following was in the text of Mr. Sadat's address, but he did not read it publicly. Quote, "No one is more entitled to your support and backing than the Palestinian people. A grave injustice was inflicted upon them in the past. They needed a reassurance they will be able to take the first step on the road to self-determination and statehood. A dialogue between the United States and the representatives of the Palestinian people will be a very helpful development. On the other hand, we must be certain that the provisions of the Camp David framework on the establishment of a self-governing authority with full autonomy are carried out. There must be a genuine transfer of authority to the Palestinians in their land. Without that, the problem will remain unsolved." The remarks about the Palestinians would have been provocative to Mr. Begin, who has declared he will never permit a Palestinian state to be established. He has called the Palestinian Liberation Organization the most barbaric group since the Nazis. Later, Mohammed Haqqai, the Egyptian embassy's spokesman, said that the section on the Palestinians, which was on page 7 of the printed text, had been inadvertently omitted because Mr. Sadat had turned two pages instead of one, and accidentally skipped that portion. The White House made public the texts of the documents included in the peace treaty package. These include the actual preamble 9 articles, 3 annexes, and 1 appendix that comprise the actual treaty text. In addition, there is a document of agreed minutes covering the differing interpretations of the treaty. A letter signed by Mr. Begin and Mr. Sadat and covering the controversial linkage question of when negotiations on the Palestinian self-rule question would begin, 1 month after ratification of the treaty, and when the negotiations would conclude, about a year afterwards, was also released, as were certain clarification letters from Mr. Carter and maps. End quote from the New York Times. Now compare this with what happened. The plans for peace between Israel and Egypt worked. They opened trade and diplomatic ties, and Sinai was returned to Egypt in March 1982. However, it wasn't a normal relationship. Trade existed, but it was minimal. Egypt was not necessarily happy with it, but it was now reliant on support from the US and couldn't stand up to a war with Israel. Egypt was ostracised by the other Arab countries. The headquarters of the Arab League were moved from Cairo to Tunis. Trade and diplomatic ties with Egypt were cut off. Egyptians were happy for peace, but things were not as good as they hoped they would be. US aid came in on levels close to what Israel was receiving, but Egypt was a much larger country, and it did not have the same effect, while Egypt lost aid from the oil states. Sadat's regime began to change. his corrective revolution was forgotten as he turned towards repression. He alienated his Islamist support by being too friendly with the West and Israel, while rejecting events going on in Iran. In October 1981, he was assassinated by a group of Islamic extremists. The popular response to this was, well, meh. People didn't approve of the murder, but they weren't going to mourn him. His successor may not have had the charisma of Sadat or Nasser, but he was a smart man who began to re-establish ties with the Arab states, while at the same time maintaining a good relationship with Israel and the United States. This man, the new president of Egypt, was Hosni Mubarak. He would remain president for almost 30 years, until the Arab Spring of 2011. Also of note, before we go, is how positive the view of Carter was in that New York Times article. The Treaty of Washington was good for him, but he was about to face political disaster in the Middle East. If you've enjoyed today's episode, you can check out the website, thehistoryofpodcast.com. You can also like the Facebook page, facebook.com/thehistoryofpodcast, and you can also follow us on Twitter, at twitter.com/thehistoryofpod. I'll see you in 2 weeks, when we go back to catch up with one of the most important states in the region, one which would change the world in 1979, one which we haven't visited since episode 7, Iran. Allah.